I really get frustrated that 66% or two-thirds, what they say, of global workforces, Australian workforces, are disengaged.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we unpack the future of sales together. We will bring you the very best experts who can help you to navigate the pathway forward and shortcut the way there, learning from their successes, their failures, and everything that they can unpack to help us to take our first steps. Now, before we get stuck into today's conversation, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel so that you never miss an episode. And also, if you love what you hear, leave us a review. That really helps us to spread the good word, attract even bigger and better guests who can help us all to navigate the pathway forward for the future of sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales Podcast. Now, today we have the most incredible guest. I came off this podcast absolutely buzzing from this conversation with a page full of notes and really inspired to just go get for the year ahead. So we have on the podcast Roger Vitanez, who is founder of Leadership Counts and a leading certified EOS implementer. If you have not come across EOS before, it is the tool and methodology that's talked about in the book Traction by Gino Wickman, and it's become quite a global movement with hundreds of EOS implementers globally who really help entrepreneurs to scale their business successfully. And we unpack in our very first question a little bit more about what EOS is, and Roger probably does it more justice than I could do. Now, I want to share with you a little bit about Roger as background to set the scene before we dive into the conversation. And I think you'll really see that a lot of this rings true in what we talk about. So Roger's philosophy is be true to yourself and surround yourself with great people. That absolutely shines through. Roger was born in London and is the youngest of 10 children, which I want to meet his mum. That is incredible. He is married to the lovely Lynn, and they have two teens, Mia and James, and a two-year-old Moodle called Millie, who makes herself known at one point later in the conversation. So we hear a little bit of a hello from Millie. Roger loves to share his knowledge and experiences to help entrepreneurs get more of what they want from their business. And I would definitely say Roger is one of our incredibly generous podcast guests who offers tools, resources, help, and really comes from that help first ethos and mindset. From age 24, Roger managed his family-owned global logistics company. And then at 32, he used his passion for sport and fitness to co-found a UK sports enterprise. He sold the business in 2006 and then came over to the lovely Australia and is still here years on. So with his expertise in leadership management and building high-performing teams, Roger has helped leaders of over 400 companies take themselves and their teams to the next level. I think that so much of this just shines through in our conversation. Roger has walked the talk himself and also held the hand of others. So this is honestly one of my favorite conversations for you to get your hands on. Now, before we dive into the conversation, a quick shout out. Roger is one of our lovely Rev Up experts. So if you have not heard, the doors are open for Rev Up, which is our community and membership to bring together revenue generating teams to learn from the most epic lineup of experts such as Roger and grow through our Rev Up system. So you can check out more details about that with the link in the show notes if you'd like to hear more. Doors are closing on the 30th of June, so make sure that you jump in and you check it out. So without further ado, let's meet the incredible Roger. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. Today, we have the incredible Roger Vitanez, who I am so excited to have on with us today. Roger, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Abby. So such a privilege to be here. And I'm excited just to have a great conversation with you and for the benefit of your listeners, our listeners. Great. Thank you.
So I have been admiring your work from afar for quite some time. The backstory for everyone listening is one of our lovely clients was working with Roger and just raved about Roger and EOS and how it really transformed their business. And they had a huge success journey with it. Ironically, two of those people are now working with Sales Redefined. We've kidnapped and stolen them. And they're starting to bring in some of that level of thinking. So we're starting to really see the true superpower of yourself and of EOS. And I guess a great place to start would be for anyone who has not come across EOS or read the book Traction, which starts to give you a door opener into it. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot and an overview to get everyone on the same page?
Sure. Look, simply as in EOS language, always we're very simple. But look, a lot of business principles, methodologies, frameworks, systems, they've been around for hundreds of years. They're going to be around for 100 more, right? But EOS in a definition of what entrepreneurs look for is it's just a simple set, right, of concepts and practical tools. It's helping 190,000 companies around the world now to use the system to do three things: clarify, simplify, and achieve the vision, the actual traction part two, which is what I love about what we do. The type of people who come to us are the entrepreneurial leadership teams, and what they are experiencing is growth issues, the phenomena of hitting the ceiling. They have profit challenges, people issues. 82% of companies, entrepreneurs say they don't have all the right people in the right seats. Processes, do they have them? Do they not have them? Are they simplified? Do people follow them? And the list can go on in the sense of frustrations. But the entrepreneurs typically like the sound of EOS when they come to us simply because it sounds simple and because it is, and because there is so much proven success out in the marketplace now on a global level.
And when you say entrepreneur, obviously the word is sort of thrown around quite interestingly these days. It makes me sound old. Are you seeing that as a certain stage of business, a certain size business? Is there like a minimum, a maximum in terms of the principles we're going to talk about today? Who would this work for?
Yeah, look, entrepreneur to me, and by definition, is a founder of an entity, of a company that has a vision. And they know exactly, they can see it in their head, and off they go. And they have this hunger, determination, and grit about them that they need this vision, which is a purpose-driven help or creation to build something and help the world or solve a problem. And that is the definition for me as an entrepreneur, because I've been there myself. Whether people call them serial entrepreneurs, that's obviously some crazy people who want to do 10 in a row. But my bottom line is entrepreneurs are the founders of businesses, and they build teams and product and services that are going to make a significant impact in our world, and they have. So that's who we love to work with.
And even, I suppose, for larger businesses, for me, starting to come closer to EOS, I'm finding actually some of the same principles apply. So even if it is a larger business, there's still so much merit in what we're going to go through and what we're going to share.
Yeah, there is. Look, I think EOS gets entrepreneurs to just look at their business in a fresh way, a fresh approach. We call it the six key components. It's the EOS model. And to the degree that, they and their leadership team of people we work with can strengthen those six key components, it's a really proven methodology that has a process that sits behind it, which they can then, put commitment, trust, and consistency into it. And that's why it works.
What are the six core components that you just referenced there?
The EOS model is vision, 100% knowing where we're going and how we're going to get there. Having the right people component is strengthened into 100% that you have the right people, culture fit, the hand in glove people you love to work with, and they are all in the right seats of the accountability chart, which is our structured tool. Having the right data and very strong data about having an absolute pulse on your business and migrating that to everyone across the organization so that people actually come to work and know how they contribute to the goals and objectives, which most don't. I really get frustrated that 66% or two-thirds, what they say, of global workforces, Australian workforces, are disengaged. Like, how can we let that happen, right? So when we have the right people, right seats, they love data, they love the transparency model that is EOS, and then they are connected and they have that purpose and autonomy to contribute, to help build something that's bigger than themselves. The fourth component, because it becomes so transparent and you have a cadence now on your business and everyone knows what's going on, it flushes out impurities of the businesses, the challenges, we call it the issues, right? But if you look at the definition of issue, it's a topic for discussion or debate. And we teach entrepreneurial leadership teams to know how to set up and solve their issues for good with no band-aids. So that's strengthening that, and that can cascades. And then we obviously look for the value builder in the business, which is the systemization. We call it process. So what are the core processes of the company? Are they simplified and documented in a fashion and a centralized manner that everyone knows them, gets trained on them, and can conform to something simple but effective with profitability, efficiency, and fun? And then the sixth key component is taking the vision down to the ground, which we call traction. And that is about instilling focus, discipline, and accountability into the leadership team and throughout the whole organization, no matter where you look.
And one thing I think has been really interesting for me, so since Cole came into the business and started talking to me about some of this, having worked with you, some of the things that he said, and I'll be really honest, it's publicly going out there. Some of the things he said are, Abby, we should do, let's take the accountability chart you just referenced. In my head, I'm like, everyone knows what it is. Everyone's got a job description. Everyone knows what their job is. They know what their key results are. Like, okay, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to play the game and let's do this. And I'm publicly admitting he's right. And then we started to do the exercise and it was like, oh my goodness, we are actually on different pages about certain things. So I would say and I'm putting my hand up first here, for anyone who's just heard what you've said and gone, yeah, we've got the vision. Yep, we've got our accountability. Yep, we know that. And sort of skipping past it, I would say that is what I started to do. And it has been a really interesting process. It's quite confronting and quite brutal of going through this in a positive way to go, oh, wow, there's all this opportunity that we can improve, we can refine, we can work better as a team, we can, you know, all these things that have come from it. But you almost have to trust the process and not skip over it and go, I've got that accountability chart, because it's been an eye opener sitting back and watching it. Is that something that you see with many people, or is it just me and I'm gonna feel upset now?
No, and you know, I'm not just gonna acknowledge you, but I think your mindset on approaching something like, you know, the creation of your first draft of your accountability chart, which is where you sort of have to let go of your ego and your roles, your current, you know, tasks that you do in the business in order to scale. And it is a confronting process. And it's actually the first piece of work after we teach some leadership abilities over hitting the ceiling, a breakthrough the ceiling, because every organization goes through that. So it's the first piece of work. So when a leadership team comes in to see us, and here we are facilitating some really open and honest questions like, are you in the right person? Are you the right person in the right team? Oh my God. So it is a confronting thing. But what I love about the chart, beyond an organizational chart tool, is, you know, you're defining the clarity of the roles, the production and productivity of each person in the company called key results. They know who they're also reporting to, but something that the listeners must be aware of, because there can be an assumption with structure and hierarchy. And that is it just a top-down approach? And that doesn't necessarily work for my culture I wish to create. Totally respect that. But we assume that a communication goes across that accountability chart and up and down, right, as a culture is created. But from a point of view of time management, showing capacity issues of one's burnout versus every employee is going to tell you they're busy, right, it actually identifies issues for you real quick, including first of all starting with yourself and your own unique ability of where you want to sit in your business, Abby, so compared to what you need to delegate and elevate to your energy, which you have abounding flows of it. When I met you, I was just like, okay, I want to work with you.
Right, I have a lot and
yeah, but, me too. But the key is this, if we disperse our energy to parts of our company that we can have comfort in or we are really good at, but it doesn't grow the business or what we should be spending our time in, the few kilowatts we have, then we burn it real quick, right? Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I've gone through burnout before, and it's probably something I'm very aware of. So for me personally, that's one of the highest risks to my business, is I burn out.
Yeah. So as we picture the accountability chart as it's drafted, the clarity and light bulbs come on and in the team. And then we have tools on which to actually then solve how we're feeling about that. Oh my gosh, I'm in three seats. What am I doing? Okay, well, we need to look at what that looks like in a 6 to 12 months. Anyway, I won't go too deep into it. It's just one of my favorite tools because actually it's very, very underestimated. I think even after 6 or 12 months of EOS implementation, it's like, oh yes, we haven't been looking at the accountability chart. And it's just staring you with some spotlight solutions ready to be made.
And I think for me, you know, just going back to that trusting, you know, when I read the book, and this was before I met you, there was an exercise in there about making sure you had the right people. And I think it was writing down everybody and then looking at the values that people had in the business. And I looked at every single person that had ever touched the business, whether it was a contractor that was working for us, you know, doing copy or design, or whether it was an employee. And I looked through, and again, you're kind of in the book and you're like, right, I really should do the homework in the book. It's asking me to do the exercise. All right, I'm going to play the game and do it. And then when I did it, it was an eye opener. And even now, you know, we put a job role out yesterday. It kind of gives me quite a bit of clarity as to your point, as to who are some of the right fit on the bus culturally. And I don't think without doing some of those exercises, you can gain, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I know who I want. I know who it is, but it just gives another level of understanding. So I would say for me personally, you know, I haven't worked with you yet, but it's coming soon. But I know that even what I have touched has given me better insights than I thought it would.
Yeah, look, Patrick Lencioni is one of my favorite authors because he always writes the fable story that we can all relate to, right? And in Five Dysfunctions of a Team, he talks about team health. But one of the things, the People Analyzer tool, the EOS tool you were just referring to, we only can typically have two people issues in our companies. One is where we have the right person in the wrong seat. So on the accountability chart, look at family business, right? 70% of businesses in Australia, in our beautiful country here, are owned by family. So why does the sister end up in marketing? Or why is mum still doing finance when the business has scaled beyond her skill set? With love and due respect, we're being told, hey, have a look at this, right?
Yeah.
They're obviously, most of the time, the family will be right person, but are they in the right seat? So you can have a right person in the wrong seat. Let's see if we can offer them another seat. We don't want to lose good people, right? Particularly in these days where it's talent is so you know, being limited by post-COVID world. Then you can have a wrong person in the right seat, Abby. And these are the challenges which a lot of entrepreneurs find difficult to deal with. And that is where you have a non-culture fit succeeding in the seat and everyone's really, really itchy and probably very irritated about them staying in the business. And that's why we always say we've got to make brave people decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it helps make decisions. The process helps make decisions.
It's
sort of, you know, you don't sweep it under the carpet. It helps make decisions.
Yeah, look, you would be like this with, you know, with Sales Redefined, right? But you meet a client, you look them in the eye and you say, follow this tool and communicate it to the individual. Everyone will be happier, especially the individual. Mm. Like I always say, we don't own people in our companies in the sense of the life. Life's too short. They have one life, we have one life. So if they're not happy or they cannot produce the expectations we set, and with EOS, it's very clear to set expectations around the foundational tools, then they're actually going to be happier and more fulfilled in another organization. It's just not ours. Mm. But because there's so much emotion to deal with human behavior, it's often non-confrontational. And it's like, oh, you know, we have elephants in the room. So we say, hey, come on, let's do the right thing, right? And we have to have those open and honest discussions. And when we tell people the truth, The one thing I do is when I teach them the tool, and then they say, "Rog, but we can't do that. We haven't got anyone to replace them." And then 3 weeks later, 60 days later, "Hey, Rog, thanks very much. We're so happier. She's happier." And it's just lovely when you can make that impact real fast.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And for anyone listening and not watching the video, Roger just went and got a toy elephant, which was the elephant in the room, which I believe, understanding from Claire and Cole, you put on the table in the meetings and address the elephant, which is a brilliant way to do it.
Yeah, psychologically safe, but real.
It was a nice elephant. It looked like a friendly elephant. I wasn't scared by it. So I want to move us to looking at FY24, because the really interesting thing, I think, at the time that we're sort of putting this podcast out to the world, for anyone listening, people might start to be thinking about FY24, okay, cool, where am I going, what am I doing, and how do I sort of lay the foundations for the year ahead? And even the conversation we've just had might have prompted a few questions. So what would be your recommendations around that, around starting to look at your FY24 planning? And sort of get some solid foundations. Year ahead.
It's such a pertinent question, right? Because we're in Q4 now, heading towards annual planning. Some of our clients run calendar year fiscals and planning in Jan-Feb because of their seasonal work. But let's just put it into the financial year now. I had a phone call yesterday from, again, an ex-client who's ran the system through their global learning graduate training company. And he's now joined another business and he wants his CEO to look at EOS. And she was asking me yesterday, she said, "Well, we've got to present to the board on the 20th of June. So how can we get this work done before then?" And I said, "Just letting you know, that's actually not possible based on your some of your people being away. But let's just simplify it like I love to do. We have a tool called the Vision Traction Organizer. And how Gino Wickman and collaboration he had from his peers and like Dan Sullivan, he created this tool called the Vision Traction Organizer. And all I can plead as a passionate encouragement is please use that tool if you're going to do some FY24 planning and beyond. It's a two-page tool. It shows you where you're going to go and you can define it simply and how you're going to get there and take it down to the ground and execute magnificently well with focus and discipline. Now, what we do at EOS, just because I want to sort of peel back a little bit by the doing, in our process, we first look at the first day of an offsite annual planning is let's work on ourselves first. Let's not just go through another year trying to achieve stuff. I'm a big believer that human behavior, relationships, trust, right? They're just too important to ignore, where strategy can just come over us and say, let's do stuff. So we've spent some time increasing team health. I would always encourage companies to, get some tools and trust building exercises, activity that's not team building. It's real, tangible discussions and tools that actually help them to become more cohesive, functional, and open and honest. If we can do that on day one, then we can then really have a reset ourselves as a team. I'm just going to pause there because I'd love to know your interjection on that.
Yeah, so look, where we've had Cole come into the business, who's obviously done this with you for years. The first offsite we did with Cole on the business, I kind of said, "Oh, don't know about that trust builder exercise, not sure about some of those." And I kind of said that, which was a mistake. And Cole and I were only just starting to work together. And so he probably let me have it. And then the second offsite, I just stood back and said, okay, he's running the agenda. I brought him into my business as someone that I respect and trust the process. He put Trust Builder on the agenda. And again, I'm someone who just likes to get shit done. And it's almost like, this is, are we going to waste time here? Is there value in this? And so on. Maybe it's because I'm sales. So my kind of like building relationships is going out for out for dinner or for a drink. So sure. I kind of wasn't sure about it, but I literally said, okay, I'm not going to say a word. Cole's put the agenda together. I'm trusting this. And I would say it was a very, very valuable exercise. I was wrong. It was incredibly valuable, and I was wrong to have taken it off the agenda first time. And it's another one of the sort of same points I'm getting to. It's one of those things that you're like, oh, that's a nice to have. Yeah, we'll do that quickly. And then, you know, off we crack. Whereas actually there's so much power in it. So that's, yeah, that's where I'm again coming back to trusting the process.
Yeah, so thanks for, this is what we look for, like open-mindedness and that whole open, honest and vulnerability. So those trust builders are based on vulnerability-based trust, not, oh, I don't trust you, Abby. It's more like, hey guys, can you be open and honest with me? I'll be vulnerable to listen. Can you please give me some feedback? Mm. And when we can become like that, then what we can do from those exercises is receive feedback without being defensive, learn about ourselves, our awareness is raised. And then we can look at things like, hey, how did we actually go last year? Did we get all the things that we wanted to get done in FY23? So you must have a full review of your financial performance, your sales and marketing, and of course, the strategic goals that you set out in 23. And open and honest, review them. What did we learn? What did we do well? Celebrate the wins. Wow. We keep saying, please celebrate wins. You've got to sometimes take a deep breath and pat the backs and, you know, acknowledge everybody's effort and commitment and loyalty to your companies. So we need to get a good balance of that, not just, oh, but this is still an issue. Yes, let's flush out the issues too. So on day one of annual planning, we review the prior year. We always review the prior quarter seamlessly. And then we flush out issues, things that we didn't do well or what we learned from. People like you, Abby, who are very visionary people, they will come out with the ideas already for 24. So we flush all that goodness out. And then we start to build a sort of a list of what we can rally around for 24. But on day one, we stay with the team and we stay very high level, 30,000 feet thinking. What else can we, where else can we take this business? What's the market telling us? What's our customers telling us, et cetera? So we take this very fresh approach to not staying in the weeds on day one, flushing everything out, resetting the vision on that vision traction organizer tool, and everything's challenged. Are our core values correct? Are we living and breathing them? Is our core focus right? Is this 10-year target we designed, you know, 12, 24 months ago, do we still believe in it as a leadership team? So we challenge everything, marketing strategy, sales, you know, process. Do we need it? Do we need training like from someone like Sales Redefined? It all gets flushed out. And then on day two, we can take it back down to the ground again and start to look at, okay, what's our next 12 months look like? What is our quarterly plan, which we call ROCs, look like? And the team can then really start to narrow its energy, discipline, focus, and then hold everyone accountable.
I've just realized how dangerous this conversation is. I'm literally like, oh my God, Cole's just given us a snippet. He's not clearly done to the extent he's not, you know, EOS implementer like you are. And he's just given us flavor nuggets of it. And I'm literally sitting here going, right, when we get off this podcast, I need to give Cole a call. We've got to do it. We've got to do it now. And it's getting me all excited. So I've just realized this podcast is a bad idea because I'm very excited because I think it's really powerful.
Thank you.
That's dangerous. So thanks for that. Going back a step on the, you said about the vision traction organizer as a two-pager tool. Is that a free tool that we can put a link to in the show notes or is that part of your paid engagement? Can we get our hands on it?
No, not at all. You know, one of the things I was amazed at, and of course there had to be a time where we did commercialize it better as a growing worldwide company. But, you know, when Gino wrote Traction, the tool and its links to those tools were given abundantly. And we always say in EOS, have abundance mindset, right? There's plenty of work out there and be abundant as a community and help first. So in a help first value that we have, which is expect nothing in return or before you expect anything in return, if anyone wants the VTO, the Vision Traction Organizer, it's in Traction as a book. I'm happy from this visit, you know, to your land of Sales Redefined. I'm happy for people to reach out to us. We can send them books, we can send them tools. And, you know, we're just encouraging. 190,000 companies are using these tools because they're a bunch of them are having a go themselves, right? So, yeah, very abundant minded.
I did come to your office and steal books and steal printouts. I'm not encouraging that publicly, but I did do it. I'll admit it.
You're so funny.
Roger did give me the books with his blessing, but I was very excited about it. It's my love language.
Fantastic.
So I want to talk a little bit about execution, because I'm super passionate about execution, because I think we can have the vision, we can have the great idea, and then the rubber hits the road. And I once read a stat, I don't know whether this is accurate or whether I've quoted this correctly, but it was in the order of magnitude that only 2% of leaders feel confident that they can actually execute the strategy that's ahead. And so I think that it's really interesting in terms of a lot of great ideas or strategies that people might come up with at this time of year for the year ahead might fall down in that execution phase. So what's your, and I actually, I'll build on that. I certainly notice when we work with people, sometimes some of the teams lack confidence in what we're talking about, because it's like, oh, this is just management's next brainchild. And in 2-3 weeks time, we'll be on to the next thing. So there's not even the confidence to sort of execute. So I want to talk to you about your take on how do we double down on execution so our FY24 strategy does see the light of day?
It's a brilliant area to cover, so thank you. We say at EOS, and Gino made that big statement when I read Traction for the first time myself in 2015, and I read it, vision without traction is merely hallucination. So why is that, right? Well, why it is what I hear every day in my work as an EOS implementer, is that the people who are coming to us for EOS already starting to talk about we have too many priorities. The people in the company say, I'm suffering from whiplash. I don't know what has become a priority. We had three businesses get acquired last, client companies get acquired last year. And when the merger happens, we get this maybe more of a APAC or global, acquirer. Start to say, hey guys, we got to do this now. This is what we're going to do since, you know, we bought you. And it just becomes completely overwhelming, unsustainable, and just not smart. So what we say at EOS with your 1 year planning, and I think it was Bill Gates who said most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 3 or 10. And this is why we see this beautiful work that we do, and I'm so privileged to have it in my life, is that we see our clients reach their three-year pictures in 2 to 2.5. Is when they take it down to the ground, 3 to 7 strategic goals of the year, less is more, not 23. And if we can align the team around what those 3 to 7 big goals are, then your execution already is being set up for success. Then we chunk the annual plan into 4 quarters, which we call ROCs, so 90-day world, where we have 3 to 7 priorities from those 3 to 7 goals. And when we get that laser focused, and we are just being, you call it trusting the process, but we have to also say we've got to trust the team that is the capacity they have for this 90 days. It's not 12 months. It's 90 days. What are we going to do to stay on track for that 1 year? And I've just seen this so many times. I've worked with about 68, 70 companies so far in EOS in 6 years. And just to see them shift from this, let's do everything, to guys, we've all agreed and discussed and debated, but this is what we must do 90 days at a time. And that's where you double down on execution. It's just the less is more approach.
Yeah, I saw some research on that. I think it came out of the 4 disciplines of execution, where if you had more than 3 goals, your likelihood of actually achieving them starts to diminish. And then I think it was when you start to get over the 7, it becomes actually your probability of achieving them is actually 0. And I get it. You know, I have massive shiny toy syndrome, and I think a lot of founders do. But I do think there's so much power in that, in bringing it down to what are the couple big, you know, big goals that we're going to go after, and everyone's got clarity. It's such a superpower for execution.
Yeah, it is. And it depends on 2 major key factors from there on in: right people in the right seats on which to execute and support those goals and objectives, for whether it be the annual plan or even the quarterly plan. And the second thing is measurement. And we have this brilliant tool in the Level 10 meetings, which is the weekly meeting pulse of how are we going, are we on track, off track? And the leaders need to demonstrate tangibly, right? Demonstratively, am I on track or off track with this quarterly rock? I'm the accountable owner, but I may be collaborating with Abby and Claire. So I need their time. I've had to schedule their capacity and mine. We become really good, better, faster, and stronger planners. And we teach that right up front. And I think when we get that right, the confidence just grows with the process of 90-day world. I just love it because it's just, I'm with you, Abby. I'm just like, Lynn, let's do 10 things this quarter. She's like, how about we do two?
It's all right. Now I just want to add being an EOS implementer to my list. I'm like, yeah, this sounds like great fun. Do you think, sidetrack for a second and follow my shiny toy syndrome and my thought. Do you think you're, because I think you're a powerhouse at this, and part of it, I wonder, is because you've had what we probably should have touched on at the start, is you were a business owner yourself. Mm. You've been through the journey yourself. Therefore, you can have a level of empathy that no one else can because you've sat there in that seat. You've been in their shoes. Does that make a difference for you?
I believe so. And I think we've got to be real and open, honest about this around skepticism of business coaching in the whole world, right? And just, so I was playing golf last Friday, and one of my clients, once a client, always a client, right, Abby? But graduated client, worked with them for about 5 years. They always wanted to hit the 20 million mark. They're going to hit the 20 million mark this year. And he was sharing that celebration as we were walking down the course. He bought a friend, $50 million revenue online business. He turns around to me and he says, you know, if I ever wanted a business coach, I would want someone around 60 years old and someone who's walked the talk and has that experience. And he said, but a young guy like you, what, have you gone to business school and all that type of stuff? And I said, are you just trying to get to win the hole? Because I'm 57 next month. So. But the point is, I grew up in family business from the age of 17 with my dad. Then worked in global logistics for 15 years, ran the family business initially, owned by my eldest brother, and traded in Saudi Arabia, Middle East. And then when I wanted to grow more, then I set up a sports business education and coaching enterprise in England with another brother and sister. There was always another brother and sister. I'm one of 10. So, we've sort of, when you have that entrepreneurial memory of putting your head on the pillow and thinking about people and profit and the responsibility that comes with it, I think it helps hugely.
I definitely think there's a difference. So getting us back on track, that I'm learning to do better with Cole, I want to look at alignment, because the other thing that I think is important, if we're talking about, right, how do we execute on our FY24 plan and strategy, one of the things we see from our lens of Sales Redefined is sometimes there's a disconnect between teams. So in our world, it might be a sales and marketing team. Now, that might be a slightly larger business that's got to that stage. But even in a small business, there can be misalignment between team members who have to work together. So the problem sort of comes quite early. And I'm really curious to get your thoughts around, we're only going to drive the bus in the direction we want and execute strongly if we've got that team alignment. You've already spoken to some of that journey already that will create the team alignment with the shared understanding and so on.
Sure.
But I just want to dig down into that around getting alignment in our teams.
Yeah. So from a structural point of view, we may have, these three functions, which we assume every company has on the planet: sales and marketing, which may split, operations to deliver the product or service, and finance. And then we build that accountability chart structure to scale the company 6 to 12 months viewpoint. Now, once we've done that, let's say sales and marketing has split and there's a sales manager, leader, and there's a CRO, right, chief revenue officer or sales manager there. So I think most importantly, when we see misalignment, and I had this in a quarterly just last week, so it's really, again, good timing of the question, is, why are they butting heads or not respecting each other? Well, first of all, do we have the right people in the right seats? Because that will drive a mindset, again, of, when you have the right person in the right seat, in sales and marketing specifically, because I've been there all my life, particularly in sales, is they understand that there is a baton that you are passing on, where from the lead generation of quality interest for your product or service into setting people up for success in the sales team and onto, you know, creating a raving fan as a fan as a customer or client. So when you see this silo mentality, I often see the misalignment is driven by people and some politics and some defensive mechanism. Let's be open and honest, it's blame culture, right? So it's low level accountability. But when you have right people, right seats, and they are the high performers, they love accountability. They'll call things out, they'll be open and honest, and then you get this integration of setting each other up for success and passing that baton, as using the analogy of the 4x400, right? That, you know, if I do my job well and prepare well and I'm fit and I'm going to run my lap, my leg, then, you know, you're going to go better and so forth. We'll cross the line and our revenue, sales and profitability is going to be on song and aligned. That's really what I see most of the time. Have we got a people issue? Abby, I think a lot of the time we're going to do some great work together. And I mean this because of a lack of system and process around, you know, good salespeople understanding sales and really truly getting it. I'm sure you can teach me a lot about that too. But that's, if we've got the right people, we typically see in our work that it's going well, because the level 10 meeting where these guys are getting in a room every week, they can flush out the challenges and obstacles and barriers and frustrations that sales and marketing are feeling against each other, or sales into ops. And they are openly and honestly raising, discussing, and solving those issues at the core. And that's why we have strong alignment in EOS One companies, because they have they've got the sort of the pulse to do it, the place to
do it. And
it's
interesting you said there about getting in a room every week, and I made a note of it as you said it, because even that is a step change for some. You know, some sales and marketing teams work with, there's no weekly, fortnightly, monthly. Some of them gone, wow, this is the first time we've sat down together, because it's different reporting lines, different teams, and so on. LinkedIn did a study, I think it was LinkedIn, where like one third of sales and marketing professionals said they don't communicate regularly. 9 out of 10 feel they're not on the same page around KPI, culture. You know, there's just no alignment. So even the very basics of getting a room together once a week automatically is a pathway towards better communication, better alignment. Because what we find is when we do that with people, it's the first time they've done it, or the first time they've done it in a long time. So that weekly rhythm that you create with EOS is just magical.
The level 10 meeting is the one feedback we get at quarterly and annual planning on. We ask the question, what's working, what's not working, as you review your prior quarter. And if I say I've worked with 400 businesses in 15 years, I look back and I think, what was the one tool that drove that alignment, drove accountability, drove traction? It's the level 10 meeting.
Okay, so now you have to unpack a level 10 meeting.
Okay.
What's the high level of a level 10 meeting?
Yeah. Well, when we meet companies and they say, hey, is EOS right for us, at our 90-minute meeting, which is, are we a fit? Is EOS right for you, and are we going to engage? We ask them a question around what are their meetings like? And the average global rating out of 10 is 4. So that's where they're starting typically. Some are 6 and 7. Might be a little bit subjective. But what a level 10 meeting is that it is run on the same day at the same time. It must start on time and finish on time. It's 90 minutes duration, and you use the same agenda that we teach at EOS. And that is the first 25 minutes of the meeting. There is very little discussion, excuses, ego discussion. There's nothing there for us to talk about, because all we're doing is listening and reporting on where we're at as individuals and as a team, and then where the business is at as of last week. So we are right there in the moment of truth. So it's checking on each other, personal and professionally. We run through the scorecard, which is our pulse on the business that the leadership team define, 5 to 15 numbers. They know exactly whether they're showing a pattern or trend of whether they're off track, on track for the quarter and year. They then go into the ROC review, which is the quarterly priorities for the business, taking them down from the strategic goals of the year. And they're saying, how are we going with that? Do you need any help? Are we under-resourced? Have we assigned the right budget for that ROC? So they're getting all the report, you know, customer people headlines, Abby, sales and marketing, your speciality in the sense of how are we going with our people here? So if there's non-alignment, yes, elephant in the room as well. We're saying, I might have to put myself on the issues list. I've had clients, individual leaders, put themselves on the issues list for years now.
Yeah, I'm on our issues list.
So
you wouldn't be surprised to hear that.
No, I'm not actually, with love and respect. But it gets dropped down to the issues, which is the heart of the meeting, 60 minutes, but we're just cutting off any ego response, excuses and, you know, commentary. We're just reporting and listening. And at the end of that, did we do what we said we were going to do? When we've solved issues, they become to-do action items, 7 days. So we're doing all this measurement stuff. And then the team say, right, what do we drop to the issues list from that reporting that we must discuss today before we walk out of here? It keeps everyone on the same page, aligned on the priorities and not the distractions. And they have the open and honest conversations as we teach them. It's a muscle. It starts bumpy, but it gets really strong. And then they wrap up the level 10 meeting with a recap of what they're going to do for the next 7 days before they meet next, which are the to-dos, the lists assigned to accountable owners, cascade messages across the organization for anyone that has been impacted by decisions or discussions today. So no one's left in the dark and everyone's fully informed. And they rate the meeting between 1 and 10. How did we do? Were we healthy? Did we start on time, finish on time? And did we have a productive meeting that we feel is so valuable to keep a pulse and keep us on track?
And I think it means, amongst many, many benefits, you can't sweep issues under the carpet. It's like you said, the elephant's there. And it's not, you know, we address it in a quarter's time when it comes to a head. It's kind of every week there's that pulse check. And yeah, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, look, again, open and honest, some companies do, some leadership teams, they will not call out the issue because we prioritize them in 1, 2, 3. So you have to choose the top 3 issues of the week. So you hone in. Thing is, I've seen it and when I've facilitated, and that's our job as implementers to help them become more open and honest, is I'll say, hey, Joel, you haven't called out this issue, but yet when you're checking this morning, it was a burning one for you. So I think we should discuss that, don't you? Oh, no. So yeah. we take them there. We call it entering the danger. And the bottom line is we just don't betray a trust. We've got to take the teams there so they have the discussions they need to have. And when they do, you see this relief and this alignment all just kick in. Yes, it doesn't come easy, but we build it.
And I was talking yesterday on, I had another one of our RevUp experts on the podcast yesterday with Jay Pottinger. Mm. And we were talking about the power of having someone external, you know, you're Switzerland, you're neutral, you know, having that external person. It's almost like, particularly in our businesses, I certainly feel like you're too close to it. You can't see it. Nobody's baby's ugly. It's all that sort of stuff. Whereas you kind of come in as Switzerland impartial. And I think there's massive power that cannot be underestimated even in that. While your dogs are doing the podcast. I love dogs. This is great. I'm happy to keep the dogs.
Millie's obviously got a strong opinion on this one.
Well, she obviously agrees with me. So I think let's go into that conversation because she agrees.
It sounds like that.
I'll take us to the next bit. In terms of first steps to implementing EOS, I'm really curious on your thoughts around that. You know, if we go off this podcast, we go, right, great, I'm super inspired to go and take the first steps on my journey. What should be some of those first steps? We talked about the vision, traction, organizer, and reaching out to you for that free 2-page resource. Is that our first step? Is there any other considerations to go, right, where to from here?
Yeah. First of all, I love the title of your Revved Up series because it just says it as it is on the tin, right? It's just, it is what it is. You need to get your rev up and also your team and your people and your process, of, you know, sales is people and process. So in an EOS way, there's 2 ways to do it. We can offer you the help first way, which is all you need to do is get in contact with us and I'll have Lynn send out books to you. Just maybe not stealing them, but we'll send you out books. All right. Well, or you could do it the accelerated way, which is reach out to us. We can't work with everybody. That's one thing that I think I've always been very strong at. You know, you need to know that you have the right fit. We have an amazing EOS community here in Australia, in APAC and globally. There's, apart from Gino and myself, there's 749 of us globally now. But in this region, we have some great people in Melbourne, up at Byron and Brisbane, okay, Adelaide, Perth, I mean, and obviously a great bunch of guys in Sydney who are doing great work. So the point is, reach out. If I can help, we will meet and we'll provide you with this. We want to have a phone call with you and then, you know, get your leadership team in a room and say, hey, let's have some enlightenment. Let's have a learning experience about EOS and whether this system is the right system for us and whether it can help us to clarify, simplify and achieve our vision. I'm pretty sure it does with most entrepreneurs, as long as they're feeling those frustrations and those growth issues and they want to grow. And then we're here to help. So I'm happy for people to reach out on LinkedIn or email me. And certainly we have a EOSworldwide.com website, which you can do /Roger-Vitanis.
Perfect. And I can vouch for that. You know, I've had a chat with you and it's like, yep, I know I want to do it. We're not quite there yet. We're pretty close. And we just had an open, honest chat about, right, when will we, you know, look at that and so on. So it's a really powerful thing to do. So the final question I've got to ask you before you go, other than the EOS books, which I stole with permission, other than those, which obviously we love, any other business books? I'm looking, for anyone watching on video, behind your head and eyeing up your bookshelf. Is there a favorite business book that has really impacted you and or you find yourself recommending to others more than other books?
Yeah. You used the terminology earlier, and whilst Chapman wrote the 5 love languages, you know, for relationships, there is the workplace love languages too. But this book has had a profound difference and impact on my life, on my marriage, and the way I reflect on myself about my expectations on me, which have always been tough and hard, as you would resonate with that, but how he managed to pull all psychology and need and love and desire and human connection into 5 languages, I just found it phenomenal. I didn't realize before I came across that book that whilst my intention with my wife was good, it just wasn't cutting it. I just wasn't cutting how to actually communicate or show her how much I love her. So when I saw acts of service, I'm like, that's Lynn. So if we can learn how we can do things better and how we can read each other better, how we can serve each other, then I think that for me is the book that has changed my life.
So just for anyone on audio who didn't get it, you holding it up to the camera, can you just shout out the title? It was 5 Love Languages and the author?
It's the 5 Love Languages by Gary Chapman. Gary also wrote 2 other editions in the workplace as well, which is why it blends into how we can build great teams and cultures. Because, you know, I went to a client lunch, if I can just tell you this quick story, if I may, went to a client lunch. We sat down to order food. And one of the gentlemen one of the leaders at the table had been in the company, I think something like between 8 and 10 years. I asked him a couple of questions. And as he was answering them, the owner said, wow, I didn't know that about you. So if that is resonates with anybody, where we are in the world today, we need to listen. We need to understand people. And then we can do great work together and have great lives.
We ironically, quite a while ago, and we should do it again, we did a love languages test in the business because I heard a podcast where Vino Mofo had done it and found it really, really powerful. So I took inspiration and it was eye-opening that for some people, I'm giving them praise, but words of affirmation wasn't their love language. And I was talking the wrong love language. So I found that really, really, really interesting. We should do that again. You've inspired me to revisit that.
Yeah, and the key to that, what I've learned, and it's for everybody, but we tend to actually give out the love language that we love and connect most. So we duplicate it, but it doesn't work, obviously, because, well, it does with some people, but for my wife and I, Lynn's love languages are different to mine. So we
Yeah,
have to work on it and
fascinating.
make that effort. So it's great stuff.
Roger, thank you so much. I could talk to you all day. I feel like I'm going to be putting down this conversation and now being all inspired of where to from here. So thank you so much. I will put your contact details in the show notes. So for anyone who wants to connect with Roger, you can see how enormously generous he is with his wealth of knowledge and tools and so on. I'll put all the links there so that you can reach out and connect. Roger, thank you so much. This has been one of my hands down favorite conversations.
Been a pleasure, Abby. Thank you for inviting me on, and I can't wait to do some great work with you as well with Sales Redefined.
Yep, I feel like this conversation's been a dangerous kickstarter for
Well,
that. Thanks, Roger. Before you leave us, doors have officially opened for our next intake of Rev Up. Doors will be closing on the 30th of June. Now, if you have not heard about Rev Up, this is our new revenue enablement where your revenue generating teams will all come together to learn from leading experts. The experts that we have lined up to teach the Rev Up system are absolutely incredible. We have LinkedIn teaching social selling. We have Julie Masters teaching influence. We have Maz Farrelly, whose content has had 8 billion views, teaching us about storytelling and standing out from the crowd. We have Jay Pottinger teaching us about productivity and many more. We will go through the entire journey of how do you rev up your sales aligned to these leading experts. So if you want to check out Rev Up before the doors close on the 30th of June, then simply click the link in our show notes and visit member.salesredefined.com.au, and you can find out all the details you need to know, or you can book in for a chat. We love to have a chat to see whether it's the right fit for your revenue generating teams.